You ever see a guy with like bicep muscles on his thumbs? That's Elliot. 31 Thoughts, the podcast presented by GMC Sierra Trucks. And Elliot, we work a lot with Brian Burke, so we tend to hear a lot of stories about Brad Treliving. My personal favorite is Brad Treliving as a player showing up to Vancouver training camp and fighting Gino Ogic.
Where were you during this interview? Why didn't you tell me to ask that question?
I don't know. I didn't know why you didn't ask me to ask you about questions.
I always ask you to submit questions.
You didn't this time. You just went and
so
did Brad Treliving.
So you just didn't do it?
You didn't tell me that you wanted me to send some questions.
Do you always do what I tell you to do?
Generally on this podcast, if you're going to do an interview by yourself, you'll say, I'm just going to do this one by myself.
Oh, come on. That is so lame. You're creating this terrible impression of me.
It is not true. I was in Hamilton for the CHL NHL Top Prospects
game. I know, but I wish I would have. Normally, I do send you a note. Is there anything I should ask? But I didn't ask that one.
It would have been that one about fighting Gino Ogic.
Because Brad was a tough player. There's no question about that.
Yep.
One of the things I really wanted to talk to him about was, how do you stay above water in a year like this? Because I really thought that, you know, there was a point there where he was the only spokesman in the NHL for everything that was going on. And every word that you're saying is getting parsed. And you know if you make a misstep, you're really stepping in it. And it kind of went on from there.
And he pretty much did it every single day.
Every day.
There was an update. And that issue was filled and scattered and littered with landmines that you needed to stick handle around, much like Patrick Kane deking out a million pucks on the ice at the United Center. Like, as I'm watching Brad Treliving with all those press conferences that he would do after the Calgary Flames game, I'm listening and we're all waiting for like, oh, he shouldn't have said that, or oh, that's a bad turn of phrase. And I'm thinking like, this is how Patrick Kane deked out all those pucks that everyone's all impressed with. Like, that was some really difficult stick handling that Brad Treliving did this season.
Yes. And so that's one of the things we talked about. And also, we did the story recently about Chris Snow, and they're pretty tight. So you're going through all of those kinds of things. And when the interview was over, actually, it was pointed out that, you know, we didn't even mention what happened with TJ Brody. And it turned out that happily and thankfully, TJ Brody is healthy. But that was something that happened right at the beginning of all of that, too. He collapsed at practice. You know, people think that you're dealing about hockey, right? When you're the general manager, you're dealing with life. And we kind of talked to him about how things that happen in life that you're not necessarily thinking you're prepared for, you're going to have to deal with, they suddenly come.
It's like Gary Shandling once said about the writers on the Larry Sanders Show. He said, you think you're writing a show about doing a TV show. What you're doing is you're supposed to be writing a show about people that love each other, but television gets in the way. What Brad Treliving was doing this year was about life. Hockey got in the way.
I agree with that 100%.
Brad Treliving on 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
Major allegations made against Calgary Flames head coach Bill Peters, a former NHLer, Akeem Alou, who spent some time with the Flames in the early part of this decade, calling out Peters for his alleged use of racial slurs while they were both part of the Chicago Blackhawks organization.
Bill Peters will not, I repeat, will not be behind Calgary's bench. The Flames' ongoing investigation continues after accusations surfaced that Peters 10 years ago made several racial remarks to Akeem Alou.
Flames coach Bill Peters' absence on the bench tonight speaks volumes about the seriousness of the allegations against him and about the state of hockey.
So anybody who's heard this podcast has heard the line before that my grandmother used to give me. She would always say, you plan, God laughs. That's been this kind of year for our guest, Brad Treliving from the Calgary Flames. And I wanted to talk to you, Brad, about, I don't know if crisis management is the right term, but when everybody thinks that when you're a GM of a hockey team, you worry about hockey. This has been a year where you've probably worried about a lot more other things as opposed to hockey.
That's very fair. And a great line by your grandmother, I might say. It's About time somebody in the Friedman household comes up with a good line. So
I was going to say that the brains did not follow down two generations from her.
But it's, there's been, and we talked a little bit about it as some chaos that's taken place. And I give our group, I give our staff, I give our coaches a lot of credit for, you know, steering their way through that. Mm-hmm. And, but you're right, you come into these jobs and you know that your responsibility is in charge of the hockey team and a lion's share of your time is spent on hockey decisions, but sometimes life gets in the way. And when you're running an organization, you deal with all sorts of stuff, and we've had all sorts of stuff this year. And to me, you try to be as steady on the wheel, get out in front of it as much as you can. And to me, I think my responsibility is to lead for our group and sort of smooth the path out for them behind you. So we've dealt with a lot of stuff this year. But as I said, I'm proud of how our guys have responded. And we talk a lot about the adversity that you go through and the little bit of the scar tissue it develops hopefully can help us down the road.
Okay, so let's start at the beginning. There's a lot of follow-ups I have from that. That night, Akeem Alou sends his text and you guys are playing in Pittsburgh. Take us through it. What happens? How do you find out? What do you do?
We're playing, and I think it's in the first period. And at that point, Sean Kelso from our PR department comes up to me and alerted me of saying, listen, this is out, you know, this is what's going on. And, you know, it was a little bit like drinking out of a fire hose because you're not really sure what it all means, right? Obviously, we took it very seriously right from the start. I had a little bit of time between each period, the two intermissions, to really try to figure out what was going on. And because the game's going on, you don't have a chance to talk to Bill. We lost in overtime that night. So we go down. I met with Bill briefly and made him aware of the situation. And then we traveled that night to Buffalo.
Allegations of this nature we take very, very seriously. This is a subject matter that has no place in our organization. Throughout the evening last night and into this morning, we were starting an investigation into the incident. The purpose of me coming to you here today is we have not completed that. We're trying to be as transparent as possible and to update you. Jeff Ward is running our practice here today. Bill will remain at the hotel. Bill has not been relieved of his duties. We are continuing this ongoing investigation right now. We hope to have this completed quickly. But it's got to be thorough. It's got to be thorough, and it's got to be done correctly. And I'm not about to comment on anything halfway through or give tidbits or give sound bites at this point, other than to say the serious nature of this is not lost on us. I had a chance to speak with Bill last night, obviously, and again this morning. I spoke to Akeem last night, and again today. I've spoken to some other players on that team. I've spoken to Stan Bowman within the Chicago Blackhawks organization, some other members of the Chicago Blackhawks organization. This needs to be handled correctly. It needs to be thorough and it needs to be deep.
Once it gets out there, you're doing two things. You're trying to sort of get your house in order to do your homework and your review into things. And then you're also you've got to sort of keep the train on the tracks here with our team and all the questions that they have. You know, that really took up our time, you know, and then we get into Buffalo, we had a day off there and you start the process of really trying to unravel the events and find out what's going on while still trying to keep the business of the team. And, you know, you got practice and you've got all the concerns of players and coaches and whatnot that you've got to deal with. So it was a busy, chaotic couple of days.
So here's the thing that stands out for me. The NHL says, and go ahead, drink. This question will be long enough that you can drink your water. But the NHL says, we're going to wait until the Calgary Flames are finished the investigation. So basically, for 4 days, you're the only guy talking. You're the only guy speaking. And the pressure on you is immense. You know that if you get one word wrong, it's a fiasco. Also, we're in the social media era where everybody wants a decision quick. You know what's going on. Out there, people are like, this is obvious. The Flames should make a decision already. Why is Bill Peters even still employed? Why hasn't he even been fired yet? It's all on your shoulders. And I just wonder, as a human being, What's it like for that week when the microscope of not only the hockey world, but in a lot of ways, the North American news media world is on you?
Well, you don't really look at it that way, Elliot. When we got the information we got, you try to be very clinical with it and say, okay, make your list. You know, you go back to just the basics. So what are the things that need to be done? So you put those down. We needed to do a thorough review. I know everybody was screaming from the rooftops that, you know, somebody needed to be, you know, tarred and feathered right immediately. But I didn't know the information. And some of the information that was out there publicly turned out to not be all correct information. So I owed it to Bill, the organization, to everybody involved to get it right. And that's what we wanted to do. I wanted to make sure I talked to everybody involved, get the truth, get the real story of what's taken place. And that takes time. I mean, there's some people, you know, as the story evolved and you had, you know, sort of the Carolina incidents involved, you got people that are in Europe and Russia, you know, just stuff like timelines and you know, different time zones and tracking people down. So our job wasn't to rush and get it done quickly. It was to do it right. But knowing the magnitude and the scope of the story, we also wanted to keep people apprised. We didn't think sort of going underground was the right thing to do. When we had information, we shared it. We tried to be as consistent and public as much as we could, and we tried to move through it as best we could. But it was really, really important to get it right and be thorough than it was to be, you know, just get it done. And, you know, that's what we tried to accomplish. And I was the one, yes, that was out there, but we had our whole staff that was involved. We had great support from Peter Hanlon, Sean Kelso, our PR department. And like I said, our team, I couldn't be more proud of how they handled themselves through the situation. You know, we were coming, apart from all that, we were in a five-game losing streak or a six-game losing streak. We went on a seven-game winning streak right out of that to, you know, sort of prop our team, get it back into the race and put ourselves in a better position. But, you know, you didn't go to bed every night thinking, oh gosh, everybody's looking at you. You went to bed every night going, okay. Well, you really didn't go to bed. I should probably refuse that. But you just said, we got to get this right and we got to do it properly. And that's what we tried to do.
What was the hardest thing that week?
You know, seeing when you go through difficult times, seeing how it affected his family, you know, that was hard.
Let's go to Chris Snow. Mm-hmm. And we had a piece that aired just a week ago, and our producers and editors did an unbelievable job with it. And I was impressed not only with Chris, but with Kelsey, his wife, because families, as you kind of talked about there, go through it together. I know as an organization, you were debating when you were going to go public with this. And one of the things that Chris said was that one of the people who was kind of delaying having it go public was you, because you're like, it's going to be really hard to see this out there in the public spectrum.
Not so much in the public spectrum, but just knowing what Chris and Kelsey were going to have to go through, where there's going to be a ton of people, and everybody's going to have the right intentions. But, you know, I kept replaying in my mind, okay, it's going to go public, and he's going to have to go through this story again and again and again, because everybody, you know, he's going to get called by people, okay, what did you find out? And for him to have to sort of relive it is what I was, you know, that's what you're trying to shield him from. But I certainly supported them going public and knew that it had to happen, and they wanted to be advocates. And as he said many times, it's not an incurable disease, it's an underfunded disease. But that's what I was worried about, is, okay, are you ready for this? Because as much as you think you are, sometimes you're not, and it's going to be, you know, and you got young kids and now it's going to be out for them and all those sorts of things. So you try to shield them as best you can, but he said, no, this is what we need to do and we're ready for it. And the response has been overwhelming.
One of the parts I liked most about the story was when you guys were flying to St. Louis to do a Matthew Tkachuk contract, and I guess you were telling him, yeah, you know, you can't do this and you can't do that. And Chris was like, Brad, like, enough of that BS. Like, I can work. And if I can't, I'll tell you. Because I've been in that position. Like, you're protecting someone. You know, you can't handle this. And they're like, you know, I can't. Stop doing that.
Yeah. Well, he's very involved in our contract work. And we were actually coming to Toronto to meet with Matthew's representatives. And, you know, we got the news and for a large portion of summer, you're giving him his own schedule. And then we, you know, as you've got work to do, and I'm just sort of not, and not giving him anything. And he finally came back to me, and it was a hard conversation where he's like, listen, stop it. Part of what gets me through each day is being involved in this. You know, I'm not ready to go home, sit and look at the four walls every day. So, you know, smarten up, give me the stuff. This is what I do. And if it is too much, I'll let you know. But, he was very, stubborn as he can be. And you know, that it was a good wake up call for me. Cause you're like, okay, yeah, this is, you know, again, you're trying to shield them. You're trying to protect. And he's like, you're actually, you know, hurting more than you're helping. You're trying to do what's right, but I need to be engaged. Like I need, and this is Chris, I need my mind to be engaged in other things than just sitting here and dealing with, you know, my health issues. So we quickly got through that and he was back up and going.
Can you tell me as much as you can, what's he built for you? Like in terms of a system, like I heard he's built
system. He's a really sharp, I mean, people hear analytics and what he's built for us is really a data system that we track. You know, these are all like black ops, you know, everybody's analytic or data system is like, you know, secret black ops parts of their organization. Nobody wants to talk about it, but he's built us basically a data site that tracks anything and everything that you possibly can track, in the game. And it's sort of at your fingertips. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so when we got together, when I came in and Chris was in the organization, we had long talks of where we wanted to go with the department. And, you know, it's the general motherhood statement of, okay, we wanted to be the best. We want to have the best data that, you know, of anybody in the league and anybody in pro sports. Well, that's a sort of a motherhood statement. How do we get there? And we really wanted to define, what does that mean? And we came up with this system, and it's really him that's and his staff that has gone through, and really it took probably about 18 months to build it. Now it's, as these things are, it's always ever evolving and changing and improving and staying current. But, you know, that's among his many other duties, the creation of his data site is one of his biggest accomplishments. And it guides pretty much all of our decision-making.
So I'm always interested in athletes whenever they play a game. There was a guy I covered with the Raptors, and the first thing, he grabbed the stat sheet, he'd go, how many rebounds do I have? He actually would check, sometimes come out of games, and he'd go right by the bench and goes, how many rebounds do I have? And I would always laugh. Like, it became like a game. I know there's NHL guys, they'll grab the sheet, and they'll be like, how much ice time did I have? Whenever is sent to you, whether it's a printout or an email or whatever it is, or in this days, maybe a Slack note, what's the first thing that you check after a game?
Well, it's what we consider our player contribution. We have a system that measures every part of the game, and there's a value attached to it. And then at the end of the game, you're given a number.
And like an overall number?
An overall number. And that's what we call your contribution to the game.
Really?
And so my first check on our stuff is a player contribution. Now, you know, for the most part, mostly it does line up with your eyes, right? You trust, but there is oftentimes that somebody was better than you thought, or contributed better, or was more impactful than you thought, or vice versa. But in terms of our reporting post game, outside of the game sheet that the league provides in our data, and there's a few sheets, if you will, and it's all digital on a post-game basis, but it would be the player contribution.
Okay, so can you give me an example of maybe a time you said, wait a sec, that's his number. I thought he was better or he was worse. And then will you go rewatch the player's shifts or anything like that just to say?
Everything's tied to video.
Yeah. So
you can look at every chance. You can look at every turnover. You can look at all this stuff. But there'll be many times, what I'll traditionally do is watch it in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I try to go back and watch our games first thing in the morning, rewatch our games first thing in the morning. And it, you know, no
different. Is that why you're always angry when you answer text first thing in the morning?
Yeah, usually that's probably why it is. It's miserable. But you always get a different, I mean, not always, but you watching it, I know even from a coaching perspective, you think, you know, Joe Smith had a great game or vice versa. He was poor. You know, a lot of times you go watch it the next day and he wasn't quite as poor or wasn't quite as good as you thought as. And those things, when you know what the score is and the emotions removed from it, you look at things a completely different manner, right? Mm-hmm. And as long as you've been in the game, you try to be very objective when you're watching. It's hard. And what I find is even, you know, certain times as you go back and you'll notice the other team more when you're watching on video. Because when I'm watching our team, I really don't. Like, y'all, we could play whoever, and you can say, how was Joe Smith from Buffalo last night if we're playing Buffalo? I wouldn't. Unless I'm watching, you're so
wrapped up
in your team and watching your team that you, at least I can't. Much more talented people probably can, but I couldn't necessarily tell you how they played. So we do a lot of work on video, but that usually comes the next day.
So give me an idea of maybe a player whose opinion was changed for the better by those player contribution numbers.
Well, I think a guy like Derek Ryan. You know, Derek Ryan is a guy that on the surface may not overwhelm.
Doesn't get a lot of counting stats.
Yeah, but he touches a lot of parts of the game. You know, when you look back and from his face-off, you know, how he touches the game in terms of face-off. And just, you know, we measure a lot of the successful plays with the puck. And successful plays with the puck isn't necessarily an assist or a goal or what you see on the highlights.
Yep.
But a simple bump in a contested puck, a simple winning of a contested puck, a 50-50 battle won, you know, maintaining possession in sort of in a certain area. So, you know, a lot of it is based upon a lot of things that we look at is, you know, what do you do when you have the puck?
Mm-hmm.
Who has it after you have the puck? He's a guy that jumps out to me right away that, again, maybe doesn't overwhelm you with his counting stats. Maybe doesn't overwhelm you when you go and watch the game. But when you really break down the impact and helping you win, he has a fairly significant impact.
Because I have a theory that a lot of the stuff that's available in the public domain is barely scratching the surface of what teams really look at.
Yeah, it is. And again, I'm not the expert in this. I get the finished product and they explain it to me. And I know, you know, with our system now, I know what we want to find. But Chris, the simplistic way that he broke it down, he says, what's available in the public sphere, it would be like going to watch a game and turning the lights out for 50 seconds of every minute. So you've got basically an 8 to 10 second look at what happens in the game. So a lot of the public information is anywhere from 3 to 500 events that take place in the game. You know, we're over 4,000. There's just a whole lot more happening, and you're studying a whole lot more. But I thought that was an articulate way of showing or saying that, again, not to put out or poo-poo what's out there, but we invest significant money, time, personnel, people to come up with the data that we come up with, and that's just not what's out there publicly.
All right, just a couple more on this. What's the highest score you've ever seen for a player in a game, for one of your players?
Yeah, like a 101.
A 101? Yeah. Do you know who it was? Like, I'm trying to remember, like, what kind of a game could we look at where a guy got, like, 101?
You're going to back into the secret sauce here. You can't.
No, but I just want to know, like, what's a 101 game?
101, so I don't know.
Like, would Giordano last year, when he was winning the Norris Trophy, would he have had 101 games?
He would have had some real good ones.
What's the worst score ever?
Like, 8.
Are you going to tell me who got Nate?
No. But I do know who got that one. They will remain nameless.
So somebody got an 8?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm dying to know.
That's not good.
No, I'm dying to know what kind of a game that was.
Poor.
Yeah. Poor. When you're watching a game, what do you like watching the game? Are you a maniac? Are you calm?
No. Our games?
Yeah.
Well, it depends who you ask. Those that are around me probably think that I'm... No, you're trying... You get vocal probably. I'm trying to get better at that. But you're not necessarily living and dying on every play, but you're living and dying on every play. You know how tight and important each point is and how tight the standings are. But you try to get a little bit... Remove yourself a little bit. Like I said, I think I'm very reserved, quiet, peaceful. Those that sit around me probably would disagree. But
because you come across that way in interviews, yeah. But I know what you were like as a player. You were an honest player. Like, you were a tough player. So there is a switch there.
Yeah. I once the game starts, I think you get into game mode where you're dialed in.
I'm wondering, has there ever been a moment where you were about to do something, whether it was called to make a trade, called to negotiate a contract, call the league, go to the referee's room, where someone has grabbed you and said, Brad, think about this for 10 seconds?
Well, no, I've done a lot of dumb things, but the dumb one, and we didn't have the person there, is in Phoenix, where I was assistant manager. No, I didn't have anybody because I didn't say anything. I just kind of did it and then told them after. But we were in the Western Conference Final against
LA.
Yeah. And I can't remember. I think it was game two after one of the periods. I went down towards the referee's room and, you know, thought I'd share with them my views of their work. And then I came back up to the press box and Don Maloney, who works with us now, was the manager. And I kind of said, I'm not sure, but I think I might have made a mistake here. And I shared it with him. He's like, what are you talking about? And so anyhow, the game ends. And in that game, we had a guy get suspended, Marty Hansel.
Mm-hmm.
So Shanny was doing the discipline at that time. So he phones Don. He goes, okay, we're looking at this. And, you know, we're not looking at this, but then we're looking at the Hansel thing. And we got to figure out what we're doing with your
assistant general manager.
Yeah, with your right-hand guy there. He's like, what are you talking about? Well, Treleving showed up in the referee's room. So I got a call from Coley. So that was one of those where you'd like to have somebody 10 seconds before you went down there. Emotion, you can get emotional for sure.
You know, it's funny because, again, this is an NBA moment, but I remember early in my career, it was a visiting team. I can't remember what team it was, but the referee turned to the coach of the visiting team and he said, hey, I'll take that BS from you, but I'm not letting your assistant coach do that to me.
Yeah.
So, like, I can only imagine, like, the GMs get in trouble for that. The AGMs.
The AGMs. And the referees were kind of looking at me like, who's this guy? Who are you? Right? Yeah. I'll take it from somebody, but not you. And I kind of slithered my way back upstairs. I'm like, yeah, that probably, I wonder if they're going to say anything. Well, I said something.
Okay, I got three more for you. First of all, you're in your third contract now as GM of the Flames. How is Brad Treliving now in his third contract as a GM different from him in his first contract as a general manager?
Just more experience. And I think in anything you do, whether it be managing a team or any walk of life, you're better with more experience. You come in, you want to change the world and right away, but you need experience and you learn from mistakes. And we talked about earlier, you're always going to make them. Hopefully you mitigate them or you learn. You're not making the same ones, certainly. But I think you're better because of the experiences you go through. You learn more, at least I find, you learn from the mistakes more than the successes, you know. But I'm much more comfortable is not the role. I always felt comfortable. But now you're just, like I said, I don't care what it is you do, you feel better as time goes on and you live through each experience and you've gone through it and you have prior experience to draw on, it just makes you better.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I view myself now. I mean, and when I went to Calgary, you know, I was fortunate enough to have Brian Burke there who's been through it. And part of the model of having a president of hockey operations was the ability to bring in somebody that's, you know, a young manager and somebody there to go through it. And Berkey was unbelievable. But it's like anything else. You just feel more comfortable the more times you do it. The more reps you have, the more things you see, the more experiences you have, you're better off the more times you go through it.
Okay. The second one I had was just about your team. We haven't talked about your team yet. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a weird division you've got this year. Like everybody's fighting and scrapping and battling, and it's wide open. There's about five teams there really battling for the top of it. How do you feel about your group?
I like our group. I think we've gone through a building process here. You know, for a long time, we've relied on our best players were young players. You know, as this team, when I first got there, the Gaudreaus, the Monahans were just starting to enter the league. Now you look at, you know, a couple years later, you get the Tkachuks come in, and we weren't relying, with the exception of Mark Giordano, we weren't relying on 28, 29, 30-year-old players. We were relying on, in some cases, 18, 19, and 20-year-old players. So they've gone through an experienced question I mentioned. They're more comfortable. They're going through it a few more times now. Are we like any other team? You're always trying to look to make yourself better? Sure. But I like our goaltending.
You like Riddick.
I like David, and I like where Cam's game is trending to. That was sort of the plan all along, is you have two guys that can play. I think David is really blossoming into becoming a really good...
He's hilarious out there.
He's got some personality to him. I mean, half the time you don't understand what the hell he's saying, so that adds a little more spice to it because mm-hmm. he's just sort of yapping away. But he's got a great personality, battles away, teammates love him. You know, I think our defense is the strength of our team. Now, we're not putting up as many points from our D-core as we did last year, but I still think they're, you know, they're mobile, they move pucks. And then I still think there's more to give with our forward group. I think it's a real talented group. You know, we're not scoring as much as we did last year. You know, and that's not just top guys. This is, we need contributions from everybody. But I think I really like how it's trended in the last 6 weeks in particular. So we're going to continue to bang away, see if there's ways to make us better. But I like our group.
And just the final one I have for you is this. You've got kind of a unique situation now on the 29th in Edmonton because of the Cassie and the Kachuk and everything that's being said around it. How are you going to manage that? Because the last thing that the NHL needs is another on-ice fiasco, and you're in the middle of this one.
Well, number one for us is we're, I think we got a little bit off topic when we went to Montreal. And we didn't play very well. So we've got to focus what's in front of us, and that's number one. And then we'll worry about Edmonton. We're going to support our player. I'm not a big believer in going out and making proclamations in the media and talking about this stuff, but I'll be the first one to support my guys. And it's bothered me some of the comments about Matthew that's been said. I support this.
What's bothered you?
Well, just a lot of the comments about him. This is a top guy. You know, this guy's a top player. And does he get under the skin of people? Yeah. But, you know, some of the comments that he's this, that, or the other, he's a unique player in the league, and there's 30 other managers that would take him in a heartbeat. He drives our team on a lot of nights, most nights. Our team, you know, they talked about it the other day, and we don't want to get into this back and forth, but they've got his back. He's well supported, obviously, by his teammates. But we're going to go into that game when we get to it, and just like we do every other game. Sometimes the hype and all the noise around it is one thing, but it's going to be two very important points. And, you know, that's going to be our focus. And if there's things that need to be looked after, or, you know, like I said, if people are making proclamations that they're going to get somebody, as was said earlier in the week, we'll be prepared for it. We'll support our teammate. We'll make sure that, you know, we've got Matthew's back. But we're going to be no different than tonight and Thursday night and the game after the break. We're going to be focused on trying to get the points because it's, as you mentioned earlier, our division is tight and our focus is getting to the playoffs.
Thanks for your time.
Appreciate it, Elliot.
Mm-hmm.